gentlemen, this is Doris Gentry. We are live in the studio here at 1440 AM Radio. And I am so excited to be sharing your Martin Luther King morning with you. And what a perfect morning to have Carlos on here representing the Republican Party, Vinny on here representing the Libertarians, and the dazzling Chris Malin representing the Green Party. Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning.
Okay, so Carlos, let's jump in the deep end with you and ask you, Carlos, are you married? Do you have kids or a dog?
I do. I am married and live in Napa, have two adult sons and no dog.
No dog.
No dog.
No dog. Okay, awesome. And what about you, Vinny? Married, dog, kids, what?
Not married yet. I have a beautiful girlfriend and an aggressive cat that tries to kill me every time I come home. But aside from that, I make it onto the river to go kayaking a lot. I live here in Southwest Napa. And me and my friends have a Napa River Protect Our Waterways. It's kind of our Instagram collective where we try to go around the community picking up community parks and kind of retrieving trash out of the river with our kayaks.
Oh, get trash out of the river with a kayak.
Interesting access point.
You're very into the Green Party there.
Yeah.
And then we have Dazzling Chris. You've been around the bush with politics. And are you married? Do you have kids? Tell me about Chris.
Yes, I am married. I married my high school sweetheart, and then we went in the Navy for 6 years, got our education, came to Napa, raised our kids. We have a ranch up on Atlas Peak, and we have three dogs, one 17.
Oh, my goodness.
And he recently got lost for 4 days, and believe it or not, we found him.
Oh, my gosh.
17 years old.
How did he get lost?
Well, he's 17. He had three strokes. He got confused, and he didn't know his way home. We searched and searched for him for days, and then...
Where did you find him?
My niece, who lives in Montana, is a veterinary tech, and she went on Facebook, and she found him.
What?
Yes, a person had his picture up on Facebook, and she recognized him in a second, called us and said, "I found Tucker."
Oh, what a beautiful story.
Amazing.
Chris. Oh, he was so happy to see you.
Oh, he's staying close to home now.
Yeah, that was scary. Okay, so each of you represent a different political party. And I want to know, kind of, if you could, in a few sentences, what is unique about your party? Because the thing to me, and then I've got the beautiful, dazzling Julie Hamilton.
Yeah, I just show up every now and then.
Thank you.
I'm married, got two kids.
My anchor here.
And we got a new pet. I wanted to tell you, we got a new pet on Friday for Livy's birthday. Did you see what it was?
I did. You got a lizard.
Bearded dragon.
Oh,
so now we have one cat, six fish, a frog, a snail, and a lizard in Livy's zoo. That's basically what
gosh.
It is.
Oh, my gosh. You and Vinny.
You better separate them so they don't eat each other.
Yeah, they'll eat each other. Vinny and his goats. Chris and her 17-year-old dog that had a stroke and got lost. And now you with your whole reptile zoo plus a snail. Okay, so back to Chris. So we're here today to talk about politics and... Carlos, we're back today to talk about politics, but see, what is impressive to me is that each of you bring to the table your best self. You bring your best self, and you each have kind of a different way that you think the best self can be represented in our community. So starting with you, Carlos, you represent the Republican Party today. And how are you bringing your best self? How does the Republican Party, forget all the, you know, the tirades and the tweets, you know, how is the Republican Party supposed to be bringing its best self to the table, Carlos?
Well, I think what we do on a daily basis, and a lot of our core values are similar to those of what the late Dr. Martin Luther King believed in.
Yeah.
And on this great day you were celebrating, you know, strong families, faith in God, personal responsibility, quality education, an equal opportunity for all. And I think those are some of the core values that Dr. Martin Luther King believed in and that most Americans believe in and people in our district and also the Republican Party.
So I really appreciate you bringing that up because today is Martin Luther King Day. And if you notice, we're minus the Democrats. And the reason we do not have a Democrat representative today is because they went to the Martin Luther King walk. And we did have the Democrats when we did this same show the other day on TV. The Democrats had their county chair present. But today they're doing the Martin Luther King walk. So I want to give applause. And there we go. Do you hear the applause in your headphones? No, you don't. Okay, I don't have a button turned on right, but hear me say, yeah, there you go. Well, I'll give applause to their cause for why they're not here today. Okay, so well said, Carlos, thank you.
And I just want to add, I think that's the same cause for all Americans. It's not just their cause.
I think so. Yes. I think you're right. Absolutely. And it should be. You know, we want to be an America that can play in the sandbox together. Yes. You know, playing in the sandbox, we learned as a toddler how to do that, how to play nice with the other kids. And that's what we need to do. We need to remember we have different thinking on how to solve problems, but we need to play nice in the sandbox together. Okay, so Vinny, you're representing the Libertarian Party today. And when you think about America and playing nice, and what do you think the Libertarian Party brings forward as an honorable statement?
Well, I want to echo what Carlos just said about Martin Luther King specifically on this day, how he fought so much for civil rights for all Americans to get us to a point now where we can all be on a relatively equal playing field.
Absolutely.
And that's a core part about libertarianism, is that establishing an equal playing field and then leaving the results up to the effort put in to an extent. And but on a political front, it is ending the wars and restricting our participation in international conflicts. And unfortunately, we're seeing that from both the Republicans and the Democrats over the past two decades, specifically out in the Middle East. So that is the front and center foremost libertarian principle these days. Beyond that, it's decreasing taxes, downsizing the federal government, and kind of reducing government interference in our lives, like with kind of deep state interference with elections or the CIA dossier or the Mueller investigation. These are all very political things, that, and I'm not sure that they have the best place having as much of an active role in our life, is my point.
Okay, and so you feel that we should be more mindful of the international wars, the death, the casualty, hesitant. The loss. We should be less involved.
Yes.
And you believe, the libertarians believe in a limited government.
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay, Chris, not last but not least, the Green Party. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me, who and what is the Green Party?
Well, the Green Party actually started overseas in Europe, and the party is very big throughout the world and not as big here in the United States, but I joined the Green Party in the late 80s because they represent my core values of being a human being on this planet.
Wow.
And so I live my values, work my values, and vote my values. And there's 10 core values of the Green Party. I'll mention a few of them: grassroots democracy, diversity.
Diversity. So, today's Martin Luther King Day. Yay, mm-hmm. yay, yay.
Diversity, yes. Ecological wisdom and social justice,
yes.
femininity, decentralization, nonviolence. And our members have always been very active in the community. We went to the supervisors early on and advocated for aggregate, community choice aggregate, so that we could have clean energy in our county, and now we have it. We advocated for affordable wage. We lobbied the supervisors and formed coalitions. We're involved in coalitions to get increase the minimum wage. And of course, the Green Party separates ourselves from all the other parties because we do not take corporate donations or business donations during our campaigns.
Oh,
so
wow.
This is a clear-cut for separation from the other parties. And I personally,
but you're not anti-business.
No, not anti-business.
So
we're
what's
strong
your reason
support
for
of local economy. And okay, so not taking. The question was for not taking corporate or business donations so that we represent everybody equally and we don't get skewed in our decisions
as
a politician.
Okay, admirable. So let me ask you, when you think about our country, you think about America, because each of you represent a national party that's pretty rooted in America. You represent the Republican Party, which is kind of the Republican and the Democrat Party is more or less the first tier. Usually our presidents and big electeds come there, and you represent the Libertarian and the Green, which are trying to become a first tier. You guys continue to hang on to the tiger, and you're trying to get the recognition out there and get someone elected. But I want to ask you a very specific question. Homeless is a crisis everywhere. Okay, homeless, it's not a Napa problem. It's not a San Francisco, it's a problem. Okay, it's a problem. So taking your individual party, what is your approach to a solution? Let's ask the Republican first, Carlos. What
sure.
is your solution from your party's perspective?
So from our party perspective is we need to really have some private sector solutions to homelessness. As you mentioned, Doris, in your previous show, in Napa alone, there's approximately 324, and I loved your stat, which was really good, homeless individuals within Napa, the city or the county?
The city.
The city.
Yeah.
In California, we have over 560,000 homelessness
yes.
at any one time. And for most people, they believe homelessness is just chronic drug addict or mental illness on the streets. That is not true. There are four different categories of homelessness. There's chronic, which you talked about, the most visible. There's transitional, there's episodic, and then there's hidden homelessness. And in any one day, it's probably about a good even split. It's just the most visible is the chronic. And I think by implementing a private sector solution, and I can go a little bit more into detail with this, to curb homelessness, we can generate a whole legion of workforce of individuals out there before they fall into chronic homelessness. And that's attacking the roughly 40 to 50% category, which includes transitional and episodic. And transitional could be those individuals that have lost their jobs, a life-altering situation to where unfortunately they've been without a home or they've lost their home. Any two or three episodes of homelessness goes into episodic, and that's when they're at the edges there. You know, then they're desperate. You know, they feel there's no solution in life. There's no resources. They, and what do? They reach out to drugs. They become, you know, mentally ill to some degree. And they self-medicate. Then they go into chronic.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. So I love your suggestion, the Republican Party suggestion for stemming the tide of homelessness is to look at private sector for answers. And
And if I could just add one quick thing.
One quick thing.
Over the last several years, if you look at homelessness throughout the major cities in California, throughout the state, it's because of the policy of those cities. And it's not the policy of the Republican Party.
Oh, yes. Now, let me make that clear. It is not the policy of any of these parties, the Democrats who are not here today, or the Republicans, Green, Libertarian, Peace and Freedom, all the numerous parties that represent a city or a community in an election. But homeless is a crisis. So I'm curious, you know, as a political party, if you were mayor, what would you do? And you would lean more heavily on the private sector for solutions. What is a libertarian view? Is it kind of live and let live? They want to be homeless, leave them alone?
Well,
laissez-faire?
Not to put it that simply, but laissez-faire is a lovely ideal. But the important part is maintaining the quality of life for all citizens and really kind of bringing back policing of petty crime. Because with homelessness, you do see an increase in low crimes like theft and such, especially in districts like San Francisco and Oakland. And those do have repercussions that affect the community on a larger scale. For that reason, I think that a reform of how we're addressing homelessness here in Napa may be specifically needed, because with homelessness in the Bay Area, we see homeless encampments spread throughout communities in 7 or 8 different spots around town. But instead of allowing those to happen on public land, perhaps it's better for the government to aggregate all the homeless into one kind of general area, because it could better serve the homeless community itself and better protect our community at large in Napa by preserving a central area, preferably on government land, in which they could provide showers, potentially mental health, food donations, and basically basic human needs there at that one central site, instead of allowing it to exist all over our community. So that would be what I would do if I was mayor, I suppose.
So I get a little bit confused. I want a better understanding of the Libertarian Party, because in head, you kind of are a believer more of live and let live. Please don't feel I'm putting you on the spot. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah.
You're more live and let live. Let's don't have war. Let's have limited government. And now you're talking about kind of more policing. So I'm confused.
Well, that is a fair point. Enforcement of petty crimes. That is a fair point. In regards to the homeless specific issue, I just feel that it's a step that we might need to kind of make a social sacrifice to have enforcement of
those.
Thank
you for clarifying that.
Like,
yes.
Much of being a libertarian in 2020 is about accepting that the world would not go that the way that the libertarian ideal may allow it to. We can't have a bunch of every man have his own castle, free-ranging nation states in America. That wouldn't work.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. And, you know, please don't feel jumped on.
I'm just trying to
really understand. So, Chris, as we look at the Green Party and we look at your tenets and your core beliefs of the Green Party, you know, what are you bringing forward for solutions for homelessness? In your head. I know we're not really solving it.
Okay, in terms of the Green Party, we believe fairness and equality and equity and dignity and respect for all people. And oftentimes the homeless situation is a cause of economics being out of proportion to folks who are of the lower income. So certainly we'd want to see an increase in income so that it's a fair wage and they can afford to live here by increasing the minimum wage. So that's one thing. The housing market is a big problem, because in Napa County we have our pockets of poverty because many people cannot afford the rent here. And so they struggle and carry 3 jobs or more. If they're on disability, they can no way afford, SSI can no way afford to get into an apartment. And HUD carries a big responsibility here because they have not increased their share of the Section 8 to make it comparable to the rent here in Napa County. And that's why a lot of people who get their Section 8 cannot use it, because they can't find a landlord that will accept
that will
them
accept
because
it. Yeah, I heard that.
What HUD pays isn't enough. So HUD has not brought their portion of the Section 8 voucher so that it's usable in Napa County. And it's a heartbreak, because folks wait 5-10 years to get their Section 8, then they get it, they can't find a place to live because the rents are too high, because HUD doesn't pay their portion that's equal to what should be paid in Napa County.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So they need to increase it to at least $1,300. Right now it's if you get SSI and it's you get around $859. They pay 1/3. It doesn't work out. The numbers don't work. People can't afford to eat, or they can't afford to have PG&E because the HUD equation is not correct here.
So I'm hearing that the Green Party believes that government services should be increased in, like, the minimum wage and the housing costs.
Yes, our population that is not thriving, government should, you know, bring...
bolster it up.
Yeah, bolster it up as our wages go up and inflation and whatnot, and that's HUD has not done that.
Okay, and I'm not here to agree or disagree with anybody. I'm just trying to pull out the facts. Miss Julie Hamilton, you got some 2 cents to add.
I do have a question, you know, because I think this concept of bringing people together, the homeless together in one area, is a fascinating concept. And I wanted to ask Vinny, so in this area or envisioning a group of where you could bring people to get centralized resources, would they also be protected from petty crimes? So, you know, would it be a safe place for people to come? Would they have security there? And if they did, or if they had policing there, you know, would it offset the amount of money that we're spending to clean up the debris and to clean up the city and stuff? That's what I was wondering.
Precisely. So essentially, if we froze whatever the city is spending on homelessness right now and refocus it into relocating all of those people to the central location, I'm not prescribing that we make it super nice at the taxpayer expense. But by having them in a central location, it also gives the community an opportunity to interact with the homeless in a more real way, such as like with work programs or with food donations or with donations of mental health services from some of the city workers.
Visiting nurses can go to one location.
Exactly.
Or
giving haircuts to work.
Yeah. Okay, Chris.
I'd like to respond to that directly because that's old school thinking. We know what the projects were like in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that did not work.
Yeah. And Los Angeles is working really well right now with the new way of thinking.
So the new thinking that I've read about and heard about is that the most disenfranchised folks in our community, when you try to get them housed in back, you want to mainstream them back into normal society. You don't want to isolate people because, remember, these people are our Vietnam vets. They are our mentally ill. There are our folks who
absolutely
are unfortunately addicted to drugs.
Yes.
And others have had highly traumatized. The best thing you can do for them is surround them with a good community and a lot of support.
Yes.
And the more we get the private sector, when they build their apartment complex, we have the policies that certain number of those units are going to be allocated to the low income. And we're not seeing that. We're not seeing enough of that. They do allocate some, but they don't allocate enough.
So I just have 2 comments on this. One is around Vinny's concept of provide a safe place where they can have showers once a week and bathrooms that are, you know, porta potties that are cleaned every day. So I want to comment to that. To me, my thinking is that's not a permanent solution. That could work. I mean, here I am agreeing with a libertarian of all things.
Oh no!
But that could work if we view it like a hospital. You know, you go in for surgery, you go in for stitches, and you come to the central place for your most for the most basic of your healing. And that while you're in this place, you're getting evaluated, you're getting counseling, you're getting help. I mean, if you agree to receive it, you're getting support, you're getting washed, you're dry, you're clean, you're safe. And now we can best evaluate how to move you from that, if you will, call it the projects, it move you from that pod, that hospital type place, move you into the community, then bam, here I am agreeing with the Green Party. Because then we definitely want to assimilate these people all over the community. Because yes, I was born in Illinois. That's my home. Chicago's my stomping grounds. I had an office there and traveled there every week. I am well familiar with the Chicago projects, and we had LA sort of the same. But yeah, no, we don't want to silo people and drive by and go point, oh, yeah, that's where the derelict live. Yeah. No. We want to blow those projects up. We want to assimilate the community throughout our city. But then in agreeing with the Republican Party, here we've got Carlos Santa Maria, you suggested that it's very strongly a private sector issue, and we need to come up with solutions that work using the private sector model, but then pulling what Chris said, you know, the private sector, as they build their developments, certain number of those apartments or units are for the lower income. So to me, this is a grand illustration on one topic, a grand illustration how each of you want to serve our community. You have the highest and best visions for helping our people, right? And you have kind of a different approach to it. But I think we can cherry pick from each of you and develop something that's really the best. And really, don't you think the best city is the one where we all work together?
Certainly.
So I'm going to turn to Carlos Santa Maria.
Sure. And I'd like
the
to
Republican Party.
I'd like to comment what both my colleagues had mentioned, and it's nice to see that my Libertarian colleague is recognizing that from a perspective of, you know, live free, that we have to start implementing some rules. And unfortunately, as we've mentioned here, we're talking about possibly some solutions that may be challenged in the court if we remove people from different areas and put them into the old school type of model that has been a public sector failure for a number of years.
Those
are not working,
of
all. So the solution in the private sector is to reintegrate, as you mentioned, into society, not only into housing, but into the workforce. And by getting sponsors from employers, from homelessness to integration, I believe that we have a successful model there. And that could take anywhere from 1 to 3 years, but they're on the streets now. They don't have a home, they don't have a job currently for a number of years. So that's a small amount of time in a sponsor's life cycle, in their budget, and in the homelessness persons to reintegrate them back into society. And that can be done through the community colleges. We have the best infrastructure in the world.
I love our community colleges.
In the California community colleges. And they are there and ready to help out.
Yes. Yes, that's a great summary. So I didn't want to spin off this whole segment talking about homeless. But I thought by choosing one topic, and by each of you addressing your approach to the solutions, would really show us the unique difference that you bring to the table, that difference in action. So now let's switch it and let's talk about taxation. Let's do this same model here using taxation. And let me reverse and go to Chris first. Chris, what is your party, not you personally, but your party's approach to taxation and using wage earners' money for goods and services?
Well, certainly we want to have a strong community and a strong nation. So, of course, we have to pay taxes. And in that way, we help the folks in our community who are not as fortunate as we are in this room. And if a family falls on hard time and they need food stamps and they need Medi-Cal, that we pay our taxes so we can support those in our community who are less fortunate. And then our roads and our our parks and our, our infrastructure. It's important that we support our nation so we can be strong and be healthy and take care of one another when times are down. So we're not opposed to paying taxes, and we want it to be fair, and we want a strong nation. So, yeah. And with that, you know, I think we're seeing Proposition 13 coming back and taxing more on corporations so that we can have a stronger tax base so we can support our schools.
Right, exactly. That's called the split roll tax, where we kind of split off of Prop 13 and just do this increased taxation on the private corporations. I'll come back to that in just a second, but let me ask the Libertarian. We've got Vinny Estrada with us. He's the Libertarian Party. What is your approach to taxation, you know, running our nation? Hello, we need police, we need roads, we need fire.
Absolutely.
But yet you're concept of less is more. How do you balance that?
Absolutely. 2020, we need government to maintain our national and international defense. I'm not going to be able to start the Space Force by myself, guys. We need to come together for these kinds of big projects. But also, when I think back about expanding taxation, that's kind of what I'm more afraid of. Like, I would hate to see taxes increase, and that's a lot of what we're seeing put around in the media these days. And when I see what our taxes are used for in the past of American history, it makes me uncomfortable with expanding how much money we're giving to the federal government. But I want to see money spent on, like, collective bargaining for international trade and roads and those kinds of things. But I don't think we should be leaning as much into the kind of artistic grants and all of the investments I'm not sure how much we should be investing beyond what's required by the Constitution, and I try to be pragmatic in how we address each of those.
Okay, thank you. That was well said. All right, so now, Carla, Santa Maria, taxation. We're talking about your approach to government, taxes, taxing the people. When is enough enough?
Mm-hmm. Fifth largest economy in the world, California. We have some of the highest taxes in the country, if not the world. Over 690,000 Californians left the state to go live elsewhere because of higher taxes, restrictions in starting businesses, crime, abject failure in managing the homelessness. We pay way too many taxes, and it's been mismanaged, frankly. You look at the gas tax. Back in 1978, we had 28 cents of taxes per gallon.
In what year?
In 1978. And in
20 cents?
28 cents.
28 cents
yeah.
a gallon.
And now we have 47 cents a gallon for the next 10 years, and the state wants to be able to obtain roughly $50 billion to put into their coffers. Where that is bad is it's just poor management of fiscal irresponsible over taxes. We pay way too many taxes, and that's why Californians are leaving.
Okay, so you think we're being overtaxed, but also I heard you say that you feel that the money's mismanaged.
Absolutely. Look at the bullet train disaster and failure. How much money has been going into that and continues to go into it?
Okay, Libertarian, speaking up.
I wanted to mention on the gas tax, did you hear that Virginia has now introduced legislation to have a gas tax equivalent for electric vehicles? So the government will find a way to tax the people, even when they're not satisfied with the gas tax. Now they want to tax your Tesla.
Doesn't make it right, though.
It doesn't, especially when the California voted the latest gas tax internally without an actual vote. They just put it in legislation, put it up to the public to vote it down. I don't think it should default to the government increasing taxes internally. We should have to vote for tax increases, not vote them away.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It was put on the ballot, and we had to overturn it to reduce it.
Correct.
Oh, people probably don't understand that when they're reading, you know, are you for or against it? Okay, okay. Chris, you had some comments.
I didn't have any comments, but there are things that I agree with both the other parties. I do believe there's a lot of waste in our government, and I think there are programs that our government should not be supporting. It should be going to the core reasons for taxation, like the infrastructure, our health, the immunizations, you know.
The impoverished.
Yeah, and food stamps and, you know, disability services when people get hurt and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So, Chris, fix my thinking, because I think of you as the Green Party. Whenever someone says, oh, I'm with the Green Party, or the Green Party said this, I think of anti-plastic bags. I think... You know what I mean? I think of green hillsides and reduction in trash. That's not exactly right.
Well, here locally, our members of the Green Party have been extremely active. I mean, we were the first to form groups for no GMOs in Napa County.
Oh, I was all over that. I was 100. And the 4G, 5G?
And the 5G.
Maybe I am a Green Party. I tell you, every time you guys speak, I just like, oh, I want to change my party.
Two Greens right now are meeting with the county tomorrow to talk about, along with the Napa County Progressive Alliance members, and we're going to be talking to the county about policies for no synthetic pesticides being used on county parks or county lands.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Okay. So
and we're also working with the city on that too.
Yes.
With Steve Potter.
Yes. Yeah. And we need to do that. And I'm all behind that. Mm-hmm. I support that 100%. So on the Libertarian Party, when I think of the Libertarian Party, just, you know, going back to what I've heard, I think of the anti everything, you know, anti war, anti government, anti police, anti rules, anti laws. Fix my stinking thinking there.
Well, I love the law. I love our police officers. I love the idea of a government that can hold all the people together. But we need someone standing up in the room saying that the federal government should not have spent $28 million on jungle camouflage for the Afghan military. It did not work out for the desert. They were recalled. It was a complete waste of money.
$28 million?
Yeah, equally between...
We can totally fix our homeless problem if we get that money, you know.
But it's just, I don't know if our tax funds should be going to the Afghan military uniforms, and the fact that it's overlooked and they're buying jungle uniforms on top of that just kind of demonstrates how the government takes taxpayer money for granted. Like when the Department of Defense spent $100 million on flights they never even ended up taking between 1998 and 2004.
Okay, so that's really great information. I appreciate you clarifying that for us, Vinny, about the Libertarian Party. I think that it's important to remember, and I was taught this at a very early age, giving is important. Giving is important. But if you can't pay, Carlos, if you can't pay your light bill and your mortgage, don't give to the poor children in Vietnam or Philippines, or, you know, we have to take care of home first. And I've always thought that, and I've really strongly agreed with that and the Libertarian Party, that we spend so much money all over the world and our own cities and roads and infrastructures are falling apart. And so, yeah, so now I just want to jump on and be a libertarian again.
The best example I can think of is if you're in an airplane and there's turbulence, the oxygen drops down from the top. The first thing they do is tell you to put the mask on yourself, then you care for your child. That's
exactly. And that's exactly, you know, what I was thinking. Okay, Republican Party. So Republican Party gets bashed a lot because our president does a lot of tweeting and it makes people mad. I wish we could just take the cell phone away from him, but we can't seem to do that. So he keeps tweeting these personal slam dunk things. But as a Republican, Carlos, what do you think is the role of the Republican Party in fixing our government, fixing our communities, our city, our state?
Well, again, on this great day, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which a lot of people don't know this. He was, along with his brother, the Reverend A.G. King, along with his father, Martin Luther King Sr. They were lifelong Republicans. Yeah. Right. And the values that they believed in are still not only in the black community, but throughout most Americans, Democrats, Libertarians, Green Party, Republicans. These are core values to all of us. And as far as Vinny mentioned something a few minutes ago, taking care of yourself first. It sounds like you're a sort of a believer in Trump, America first in
Heaven
some way. So saying that, you know, the problems...
Not a bit.
Right, government, it goes back to that private sector solution and ideology that government will not solve our problems.
Oh, that's true.
And the state will not solve our problems.
That's
we have to solve it amongst ourselves and our communities. With the businesses, and we really have to step out of our comfort level. And that's something that we're seeing more and more by a lot of individuals on both sides of the party.
I love that. Let me switch topics, please, and ask you about churches. Now, I've recently received a lot of flack because I'm hosting a prayer breakfast. This will be my second, but I've hosted quite a few prayer breakfasts. I've lived in Napa 32 years, and I've hosted dozens of prayer breakfasts where I bring all different churches together, Catholic, Protestant, different churches, to come together to pray for our city, pray for our country. And I see it as a healing place. That's what I see. That's from my side of the fence, because I'm a faith-based person. So that's my side of the fence. And I want to know, as a Green Party member, what is your opinion? What is your idea? What is your thinking about separation of church and state? And, you know, our president hosts a prayer breakfast, whether it was Obama, whether it was Clinton, whether it was Bush. It's just a historical fact. What is your thought on that?
Well, certainly the Green Party respects all people's religions, and we would take a position that one religion over another, or persecute anybody because of their belief. So we believe in separation of church and state, and for a good reason. So me personally, I'm a Unitarian, and we mm-hmm. welcome all religions and all faiths, and we celebrate spirituality, and any way a person comes to their beliefs is right for them, and there's no judgment involved.
So do you, you know Jay Lang.
Actually,
wonderful, wonderful leader in our community of the spiritual, what is it? It's called
the Spiritual Center,
I think it is. It's, but yeah, he's definitely in your ball there. Mm-hmm. He's just a wonderful person. I really admire him. So libertarian. So originally the concept of church and state was to prevent America from having a one world religion. That's what we don't want. We want many arms, many tentacles, many factions, many beliefs, enjoying and embracing their presence. That's what the original framers of the Constitution had in mind in the idea of separation of church and state. It's not about, oh no, I can't pray. I mean, we open Congress of the United States in Washington, D.C. with prayer and pledge to our flag. So it's not about you can't pray. It's about you can't dictate that America will be Catholic. And this evolves from when all of our pilgrims escaped Europe. There was a one religion kind of Catholic belief, and they came here for their own Christian beliefs and to found their own identity and to be free of the Catholicism, having that massive, you know, stranglehold. And now we have Catholics mixed with Baptists, mixed with everything, Jewish and Universalists and everything. So there's a little history lesson. Okay, so libertarian, your view of separation of church and state, how do you handle that?
Yeah, so with the prayer breakfast, I fully support you doing that, as and I know that it's open to all different faiths to participate. And I think that it has a secular base to it, so that even non-believers could come and participate.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And so from that perspective, I view that as like using taxpayer money, the same way we might use to have the Egyptian mummy casks flown to town to like to view them. It's a cultural event at that point.
Okay.
So long as there's no kind of guiding towards one religion over the other, I would support it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that would be the libertarian view. I love that. Okay. As a Republican, Carlos Santa Maria, what is your take on the unique differences of churches and hosting a citywide prayer breakfast?
I have a very interesting perspective being a Hispanic Catholic conservative okay. Republican. I'm the antichrist of a lot of the minorities out there. However...
complication.
I am stating that we are a Judeo-Christian society built on, and in this country, religious freedoms. We were founded religious
statement.
Persecution from England. That's how this country was created. That's how the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution was formed, because of these persecutions. And saying that, it's really important, separation of church and state, and it just, in a minute explanation, like tobacco and cigarettes years ago, the tobacco companies knew and the cigarette companies knew it was killing people. Stuffed that research for years and years.
Yeah, research like 40 years.
Absolutely. Research is coming out now that is finding by taking prayer and just the opportunity to be able to have a moral base in our schools and in society is affecting communities and young children negatively. Absolutely. There is a direct correlation. Oh. And that's why President Trump recently signed in the freedom to be able to pray in our schools without all religions, just not Catholics, you know, Muslims, you know, all different, you know, Jews, all different faiths, to be able to have the freedom to pray in school without the state coming down and saying, you can't do this.
You know, and it's no matter what your religion is, even if your religion is the outdoors, the trees and nature, kind of a yoga approach, you know, just breathing on a mountaintop. Meditation and that moment that you still yourself down, whether it's just 2 minutes, that moment where you just breathe and you focus on your, what is that breathing called in yoga? It's called your core. Yeah, there you go. And you focus just on your core and your deep breathing, and you just still yourself down. You can feel your pulse calm. Now, if you're a quote, churchy person, you might pray during that calm. If you're a yogi type person, you might just breathe and meditate on nature and hear the birds chirping. You know, it's important to center and calm and breathe. Yeah, Julie.
Yeah, you know, this is something that a practice that I do every day is meditation. And actually, the science shows us that 20 minutes of meditating in a brainwave, so our brain has different brainwave frequencies, and they do different things to our body and change the way that we think and the way our brain operates. But spending 20 minutes at a theta brainwave, so I put on my little theta on YouTube, my theta brainwaves, and I listen to it for 20 minutes, it's equivalent to 2 hours of REM sleep for your brain and your body.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge health benefit to be able to just slow yourself down.
Well, 20 minutes is a lot.
That's interesting. For a while there, I was doing a 10-minute Tai Chi breathing and stretching exercise, and that was the most relaxing exercise I could do. I actually brought it to a business event, and I had a dozen coworkers go through a Tai Chi exercise with me.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I just love Tai Chi. I love Tai Chi. I love the slowness and the movements and the breathing and the standing. Mm-hmm. And you put all of your toes down, you know, you're not holding stress anywhere. And that changes. I do this every day, this calmness, this breathing, this. And the other thing too is that when you stop and you listen, all of a sudden you hear the motor of this going and the leaf blower over there going, and you hear all the different, the birds, and you hear when you tune in like that and breathe instead of cluttering everything up.
Doris, yeah. I could see you at the city council meeting starting with the Tai Chi exercise.
Slow down and breathe.
Slow down and breathe.
Okay, we are the hostilities start.
We're about to have a hostile conversation. Let's just slow down and breathe. Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so what have I not brought out about your party? We're down to our final 10 minutes, and I want you to jump in and tell me whatever you want to tell me. Chris Malin, Green Party.
Well, certainly the Green Party has a core value of ecological wisdom. And our planet is in grave peril due to climate change, and it's from human behaviors upon the planet, mostly fossil fuel use and the emissions that's causing carbon to go into our atmosphere and change our climate. And the Green Party has been at the forefront of policies.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I think of the Green Party.
Right. And certainly locally here as a Green Party member, I've been championing the Groundwater Sustainability Act and working with the supervisors to come up with a groundwater sustainable plan, and forming action groups and focus groups and bringing education. We held a workshop here. The county doesn't want to manage they want to manage it, but they don't want to regulate it, and they don't want to slow down the pumping of groundwater so that every person in the community can have groundwater in the future. So I would say the Green Party has definitely held that as a high priority, our environment.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay, Vinny, I know, and tell me too whatever you want to tell me that you haven't already shared, Vinny Estrada, about the Libertarian Party, but also too I want you to talk about the health of our river, because I know that's personally a huge passion. So first, the Libertarian Party, what have you not shared?
Well, we just want to see accountability in the existing government structures that there already are. I mean, someone should really be in jail for the water poisoning in Flint, Michigan, for starters.
Yeah.
But moving more locally, we can only be accountable for what's within arm's reach to an extent sometimes. So in the river, we've seen a strong increase in homeless dump sites along the south end of the river underneath the Imola Bridge. And actually, a recent study came out that California's riverways have a measured increase in human fecal matter resulting from the homeless encampments that are spread around.
Actually,
the river.
I do have to correct that.
Okay. Oh,
St. Helena just got fined last week for $57,000 for their wastewater treatment plants dumping into the river. And this has been historical.
No way.
Calistoga was also fined several years in a row for their wastewater treatment plants. The fecal coliform is from the treatment plants, not from the homeless.
I'm not sure if the article
I love that. Okay, but there
specific.
Was that article that did tie, because I think Vinny sent that to me, that did tie the homeless.
I believe there's a Sacramento River in that one, but certainly you're right. And it's another example of how what they're taxing. They're finding $59,000. You and I are just going to pay for that.
Yeah.
It's like the government taxing themselves. This just further illustrates the point. But.
So, yeah, I did, and I think I forwarded an article to you, Vinny, that the ducks and the geese are eating the fish from our river that is impacted by the fecal matter, and they're finding the fecal contamination in the ducks and the geese here in the Bay Area. So it is enormous.
Wow. And that's true for the entire San Francisco Bay. Mm. 1 week after another, 2 and 3 wastewater treatment plants are overflowing into the bay.
We cannot have this. Chris,
put
my gosh.
In jail.
This is disgusting. We've got to fix that. And, you know, and the thing is, that is magnified all across the nation. Like Vinny just said, someone should be in jail in Michigan for ruining that water, keeping that secret, and killing so many people. So, okay, Carlos, Santa Maria Republican Party, what have you not shared that you want to share? You're busting a gut here.
Well, thanks for that lead into this. Currently, I think California has a number of state Senate seats that are being by incumbents, Democrats that are unopposed, roughly seven of them throughout the state of California. I decided to step up to run for state Senate against Bill Dodd in District 3 as a write-in candidate for the March 3rd vote. I believe that's when the date is. And my whole purpose is to have a balanced vote for not only our district to be represented, but also for the state of California. We have a lot of our constituents that, whether they're Republican or Democrats, that want a different voice in the state legislature. They have a supermajority right now, and a lot of our voters and constituents and Californians in general are not being represented by the supermajority. So I wanted to put a plug to vote for me on the March 3rd day of voting as a write-in candidate, and hopefully I can get into the primary or the general election later in the year.
Okay, I did not know that you were doing a campaign to be written in, to called a write-in campaign.
That's correct.
So I know that marking up the ballot is a very critical thing. A lot of times when you handwrite on a ballot, it gets pulled and put into the box where it's individually viewed. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, but Carlos, as the Republican Party, what are your main concerns? What are you going forward with?
I think just awareness of a lot of our rights within the district. You know, we're talking about the Napa County. Homelessness, you know, we keep on talking about it in a philosophic way, but it is reaching into our community. People and other states and cities are busing individuals, these unlucky individuals, into our community. And when we talk about the impact, not only are our rivers, our streets, and our communities being impacted, but our tax-paying, law-abiding citizens, they're at risk, their families. So while we, you know, want to have a private sector solution to dealing with homelessness, we also have to be aware it is impacting our city and our county, and we need to do something about it, or it's going to be no different than San Francisco or Sacramento or Los Angeles, Orange County, one of the richest cities in the world. The number of homelessness in those communities is just out of control. So it's just awareness and getting the education to our voters and, you know, people that aren't Republicans. Like, we have an event coming up on February 1st. Candace Owens, who started up the Blacksit movement, is going to be speaking at the Napa Valley Community College at the theater there. And she's going to give a perspective of what she had to go through as a Black Democrat, you know, some of the things that were told to her. So it's awareness about our party and just the rights and freedoms that we have that, you know, are God-given to us.
And the Armstrong and Getty team will be there.
Correct.
The radio
talk show host,
and they're libertarians. Yeah, so right. Vinny, you should come to that event. Okay. So closing thoughts or comments, Chris Malin.
Okay. Well, I think that because climate change is such an issue before our generations now, that we should all be more green and pay attention in your everyday life about your carbon footprint, and then what you can do locally to help our cities and our counties have a climate action plan, which they've been working on for like 8 years and haven't approved. And then nationally, that we get somebody into office that is going to pass policies and work with the Paris Accords to bring our world to a safer place.
Okay, great. Closing thoughts or comments? Libertarian Vinny Estrada.
I actually want to take this moment just to thank you, Doris, for all of your great leadership as vice mayor of our city over the past year,
or
this year. And I really look forward to voting for you in 2020. And
As I see
what's happening in the register, I'm so happy to see all of the outpouring of support for you with the letters to the editor today. And we're all rooting for you.
Oh, that is so sweet. I haven't seen the paper yet today. Okay, so closing thoughts or comments, Carlos Santa Maria, the local Republican.
Sure, and thank you for this opportunity, Julie and Doris, to speak today in Larry's absence. I think from our perspective is we are inclusive. I mean, a lot of the morals and values that we have span all the parties. It's just not Republicans. You know, we believe in the right of a lot of the freedoms that other individuals and groups believe in. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, we have to take care of our own district, our own individuals in California, and really strengthen, you know, our communities and the programs that we have for our veterans and our seniors and our at-risk youth. So those are some of the core things that as a Republican Party we're starting to focus on, and also that private sector solution to get the private sector in to solve this homelessness and contribute to the homelessness problem.
I like that a lot. Okay, we're going to sign off. I'm your host today, Doris Gentry, with my sidekick, Julie Hamilton. Go ahead, Julie. Hey.
Hey, everybody. Have a wonderful holiday today.
Okay. And we're at 1440 a.m. KVON Radio. We're going to turn it back and hear a commercial. And remember, commercials pay for this radio station. We are a public service and a public broadcast. You have a great day, Napa. We'll see you next Monday, same time. And this show, if you missed part of it, this entire show will be rerun next Monday. So you'll get to hear it again. Okay, thank you, Napa. Woohoo!